What did we do last time? Did the Paragraph B, go to 552. Huaya Omer, he used to say the following. Marbe Bosor, Mishnechet, so five legs in time. Marbe Bosor, Marbe Rima. Literally, the more meat, the more worms. The more meat, the more worms. That means the more meat the person eats, the more beef that's on him, the more the worms have to munch on when he dies. Now, that's a bit of a depressing thought. Right. So what does that really mean? Buster does not mean only meat in the literal sense. Buster is representative. Buster is representative of all of life's pleasures. So the more a person indulges in pleasure for just the sake of indulgence, the more there is for the worms to consume in the grave. When a person dies, his soul his body decomposes. The decomposition process is painful to the soul. A person's body, when a person's decomposing, the soul which had been in their body feels a certain sense of shame and humiliation, because after all, that was the body that it was in. Now their body's been consumed by worms. Great tzaddikim, a person's on a high enough level, his body is not consumed at all. His body is not consumed by the worms. There was the Vilna Gaon. I just told someone about this yesterday. The Vilna Gaon, who was in, was buried in Rochester, I guess, a building. I don't know where it was, but the Russian authorities wanted to build a highway through the or a gymnasium in their cemetery where the Jews were buried. So the Vilna Gaon's body, this was in 1950, the Vilna Gaon's body was reinterred. And the people, there were about 10 people involved in digging up his body and removing it. And they all said, they testified that the body was fully intact.
And the Vilna Gaon's body. It's for real, it's documented?
That's documented. It's 180 years later. And what's also documented is that I think 8 out of the 10 of those people died within the year. And 2 of the others also died, the other 2 died prematurely. I know the brother of one of the guys did it. I know he's an old man already. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jews.
Apparently, and what was weird about it is they before they did it they asked the halachic shadow. See, what happens was they didn't have a choice. They didn't know what to do. So they had no choice but to reinter it, and they didn't know if they would reinter the entire all the graves or some of the graves, and they dug up the Vilna Gaon. That's what happened. So moving a body is very, very severe. The only time you can really move a body, again under the circumstances, there was a fact that they should do it. Normally, a body is not moved unless there's a condition made when it was buried. This often happens. People who want to be buried in Israel. So when they're buried in Chutzlars, the condition is made that they will be. The condition is made that they are being buried on condition that they could be reburied in Israel at some point. Right, so, but if they regard the burial severe, the other one who was moved with them, if you ever heard the story of Avram ben Avram, who was the righteous convert, the Ger Tzedek, Avram ben Avram, who had been burnt at the stake and his ashes were buried in the cemetery, so he was also his ashes were moved as well.
Is there a big issue for moving like ashes or just the?
I don't know. I don't know where the ashes were. I think the ashes were buried. The ashes were somewhere in the cemetery, and he was up in Avram ben Avram. His ashes in the Vilna Gaon, they were reburied. The Mishnah says Marbe Bosor Marbe Rima. So the more meat, the more worm. The more one indulges in pleasure and of life, the more the worms will. The more the worms are going to consume him, and it's painful. The Gemara says that being consumed, when a person is consumed by worms, it feels like needles in live flesh, right? And which is bad. And the limbs or organs of the body that have been used to sin are the ones that are going to be attacked most by the worms, right? And therefore, one must be very, very careful about misusing various parts of their body. And therefore, it says, Marbe Bosor Marbe Rima, the more meat, the more worms. So it's a very sobering thought. The worms are obviously pleasure. Marbin echazim, the more you acquire, marbin da'aga, the more worries you have. Right? Marbin echazim, the more you own, the word nechazim means property, and the more you own, the more worries you have. That's why if you ever buy a new car, right, if you ever drive a brand new car, you're a nervous wreck because you don't want to get scratched up. If you rent a car, on the other hand, right, you're never nervous at all when you rent a car. And I think statistically, rented cars have much less trouble finding parking spaces, right, because no matter what space is available, you're going to get that car in there, right, even if it means making some space with the car. Right, because after all, it's not money. And all those experiments you always wanted to do, like, you know, seeing what happens if you can go 60 in seconds, you know, backwards on the highway, right? You do that with a rented car, right? You know, you don't do it with your own car. So Marvin Hoffman, the more you own, the more worries you have. And sometimes in life, the guy once wrote into Mike Royko, who's a newspaper columnist, the guy wrote that he was working at the driver's facility in Chicago as a driver's instructor who was taking bribes for licenses. People would do that, sort of one of the things that people used to do. And this guy was a young guy who was making about $20,000 a year. It sounded like it was a lot of money. And he wrote into the newspaper that he's been taking bribes for, he had the job for about 10 years, he's been taking bribes, he's accumulated over $500,000 cash, which he has in liquid cash around his, you know, under his mattress and in the drawers and under thing, and the guy's going crazy because he doesn't know what to do with it. He can't deposit in the bank because then he's accountable for it, he doesn't know what to do with it. Right? So the more you have, the more you got to worry about. Right? And therefore, that's idea number one. Idea number two, is he wrote in how he's going crazy. He said he's on the verge of a complete nervous collapse because he doesn't know what to do with his $500,000. If you have an expensive antiques in your home, the minute somebody walks into the room with the antiques, say, you're a nervous wreck. I once heard about a woman who had a white carpet in her living room. You know, she made herself and everybody else crazy. As soon as the guests walked out, they walked in. Right? The minute they walked into the house, she made everybody insane. The more you own, if you have holdings, stocks, this sort of thing, then the more you own, the less that you're going to be nervous about what's going on with your property. Are your employees cheating you, and so on and so forth. Therefore, it says marbin nechassim, marbin de'oga. The more you own, the more you have to be worried about. And one of the most sobering lines. Yeah, Brent, that.
I was just saying, we rent our bodies out. You know what I mean? Like, with the rental car, you're just worried about getting point A to point B. You're not worried about, like, the finale of the car. Like,
right.
Well, that's what we should be doing.
That's right. All you are, Brent, is a rented car. That's right. The more you're attached to this world, 100%. The more you're attached to this world, right, the more you're going to be concerned about it. The more you're attached to this world, the less you enjoy it. That's the irony. You take the world so seriously, you can't even enjoy it. The less you say, okay, yeah, listen, if I get a good lunch or I get a regular lunch. Yet it's not the end. For some guy, if lunch isn't a great lunch, they're devastated. You can't even enjoy it because you're so focused. Okay, it'll be a decent lunch, but some days a better lunch. Hey, if it's a good lunch, good, great, terrific. It's a steak, wonderful. It's something my life depends on. Right? And the more you depend on it, the less you enjoy it. One of the most sobering lines that I've ever heard. The reason property is called nechassim. Nechassim is associated with the Hebrew word lechasot, which means to cover. Lechasot, kisui, means to cover. And the Gemara says, I think it's the Gemara, the Chazal somewhere, I don't remember where it is, that the reason property is called nechassim is because the true value of property is covered over. The true value of property is covered over. It's very deceptive. Why? Because a person could work his entire life accumulating property, and then he could die and leave his entire fortune, everything he's accumulated, he could die and leave it all for his wife's next husband. Think about that. One thing you leave it for your kids, one thing you leave for your wife. But to leave it for your wife's next husband, that's bad. That's really bad. Right? Yeah. So what did you do? You know, she's now the rich widow. Well, she ain't going to be a widow long if she's rich, right? And so who's enjoying the money that you were? It could be a guy that you didn't even like much. It could be a guy who was sitting across the shore from you never even liked. And one day, guy dies, this guy marries his wife, and now he's enjoying everything this guy worked. This guy didn't enjoy from Olam Hazza anything. He worked to accumulate the money, died, and now somebody else is a giant. Pretty sobering thought. Yeah, it gets worse, gentlemen. Gets worse. You know, in reincarnation. Reincarnation, you can be reincarnated. People are reincarnated. So sometimes you're reincarnated, people think they remember their previous incarnation. You don't remember your previous incarnation. Kabbalistically, we're told that you come back four times. According to some Kabbalists, you come back as many times as necessary to get it right. But whatever it is, reincarnation is not good because the soul would rather not come back to this world. You could come back four times. If you were particularly bad in one lifetime, you could be reincarnated as an animal. And particularly if you're immoral, the Kabbalistic works say if you're immoral, you can be brought back as a dog. Right? And when you are brought back as an animal, you remember your previous existence. Except that you can't, you're an animal. Now, how much of it do you remember exactly? You know that you were once a human being. That's really bad. And now you're a dog. And then you're running around barking, you know, you're sitting at the table, you know, they're talking about the Parsha, or they're talking about politics, and you say you'd like to contribute, and you'd like to say something, all it comes out as a bark, and so they throw you another bone, and that's really humiliating. And it's particularly bad if the people sitting at the table is your wife and her next husband. Right, and then there you are running around the house barking. Right, you know, that so it can get pretty sobering. Therefore, and by the way, having said all this, and so it's just an idea, it's a concept. You know, when to apply it. Don't if you see a dog, come on, what'd you do? Tell me. Don't let anybody hold the question, Freeman. Don't let anybody catch you talking to dogs. The point is, some people swear, I swear my dog is Jewish. I'm telling you, he knows what we're gonna make kids. You know, and I don't know about what he got. You know, kids, not kids. At the end of the day, you don't want to come back as a dog. And I heard about a guy once. Got called up a rabbi. He says, Rabbi, I'd like my dog to have a bar mitzvah. And he says, sure. So there I said, listen, sorry, we don't do that. You know, why don't you try the Reform shul down the road? Okay. So the guy says, all right, Rabbi, I'm just telling you, whichever shul does the bar mitzvah, you know, I'm donating $50,000. The rabbi says, well, why didn't you tell me the dog is Jewish?
Why not?
What was it? The bar mitzvah.
New York Times, this past year.
A bar mitzvah.
A guy in New York, very, very wealthy, he never had kids, and so he took a bar mitzvah for his dog, because he was one of our mitzvahs.
Beautiful.
It's actually funny, a guy in my community in a park actually ended up calling this guy, a religious guy, because he was very curious. He got the name and number from the New York Times, and speaking to this guy, and it turned out that this guy, you never had a bar mitzvah, he never had kids, so he was doing it for his dog, whatever. So this guy just sent him, take a barrel of wine, this and that, and he starts to become religious.
Really?
Yeah.
A bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So it's from the dog from, right? So at the end of the day, that's how it's called Nechassim. It's called Nechassim because the true value is covered over. I just heard, by the way, there was an interesting incident. A guy went in on Friday afternoon, a guy went and bought a car. Bought a brand new car for about $50,000. And $50,000, paid for it with a credit card. Right? Pays for the car with the credit card, $50,000. He's got a credit card to take the car. He goes over, drives the car over to a used car dealership, tells the guy he wants to sell it for $20,000. The guy says, you own the car. Shows him the credit card, he bought the car. The guy immediately suspects him. He says, it's very fishy. You know, the guy just bought a car, $50,000 on a credit card, now I want to sell it for $20,000. I said, well, he signals one of the guys. In the meantime, the guy called the cops. And then he's talking and dragging around about the sale. The cops show up. And the cops walk in. I say, okay, buddy, what's going on with you? What's with the credit card? He says, what's the problem? He says, why do you want to sell the car for $30,000 less? I says, what's your business? I can sell anything I want. It's a free country. The cops look for your credit card. Try to run a trace on the credit card. It's Friday afternoon. They can't run a trace at the bank. Right? So you gotta wait till Monday morning, right? So you say to the guy, listen, now you're coming with us. They take the guy, they lock him up. And for 3 days, Monday morning, they take him in. Well, Monday morning, they run a trace. Perfectly okay. He's got coverage for the credit card, everything else. Guy walks out, comes back with his lawyers, sues the police department for false arrest, $3.5 million.
Wow.
The whole thing was a scam. Every guy did it on purpose. They'd get arrested. They'd get it for false arrest. $3.5 million. Is that sweet? The only one I heard better than that. I just heard it. Is that nice? Josh, don't get any idea. Hey, guys, I want everybody here tomorrow. Every single one of you better be here tomorrow morning. Isn't that sweet? That's $3.5 million for false arrest. I just heard another one about a guy who got busted for counterfeiting. In Israel, a guy got punished for counterfeiting. He got fined by the court, whatever, worth 250,000 shekels. The guy paid the fine. Turned out he paid the fine and counterfeit money. He paid counterfeit money. They busted him through in jail. Isn't that beautiful? Not only in Israel. The whole country's counterfeit, so it doesn't matter. You know, all the money here is fake money, so what's the difference? You know? But they busted him. In any event, Marbin Nechose Marbin Shafir, the more you own, the more you're going to be worried. When I was 19, I bought a brand new Camaro. Bought it, drove it home. It's probably the most nerve-wracking 2 weeks of my life, was the first 2 weeks I had the Camaro. Then 2 weeks into it, I drove it on California Avenue in Chicago. Brand freshly tarred street. Got tar all over the Camaro. Right. And from that point on, it was great. I could just say, zip it around. There's nothing bad could have. What could possibly have? We got tar all over. What could happen? Right. Marbin Achosim, Marbin Doga. Marbin Noshim, Marbin Chofit. The more wives you have, the more you are susceptible to witchcraft. Now, you are limited to one, gentlemen. But by Torah law, you can marry more than one wife. However, the more a person is involved with women in general, the more susceptible or prone you are to be victim to fall victim to witchcraft. All through history, there's the concept of witchcraft in Torah. And the plain meaning here is that if a man is married, by Torah law, he can marry more than one wife. But Rabbeinu Gershom made a rabbinic decree over 1,000 years ago that a man's not allowed to marry more than one wife. If you marry more than one wife, what happens is the women are competing with each other for the husband's love and attention. And there's a suspicion that there's a concern that they will go to various witches or sorcerers to cast the spell on the husband, that the husband should love the wife. And therefore, a person who is has more than one wife could fall victim to the competition that his wives are involved in. However, you notice over here how timeless the Torah is, because all through history, I think in the Middle Ages, they used to have, in the Middle Ages, they had witch trials, right? And they had the Salem witch trials, and the witch trials in the Middle Ages. And who was it was always on trial? Like women. Right? In the command where the Torah says not to practice witchcraft, in Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah says, Mechasheta lo sechaya. A witch must not be allowed to live. A witch must be executed. It says it in the feminine. Because all through history, even though men are also forbidden for practicing witchcraft, a warlock is also forbidden according to halacha, it was more common to find by the women. Especially in Salem witch trials, they used to strap them to a log. And what they do is they dunk them in the water.
Yeah, but wasn't a supernatural thing, though, wasn't it?
They suspect them of supernatural witchcraft. They would strap them to a log and dump them in the water, and then they would use keen Gemara logic, right? They would dunk them in the water for over 10 minutes, right? And then they'd pull her up. So she died, well, she was a witch, right? And if she didn't die, only a witch could survive 10 minutes under the water, right? And then they'd put her down again for 20 minutes. Yeah, that was like that. Either way, she's gone, right? So all through history, it was specifically the women who were accused of the witchcraft. You can see that. So even the Torah writes it in the feminine.
Even rabbis,
Judaism, it's a pasuk in the Torah. There's a verse in the Torah that says Mechashefa lo zechaya. A witch must not be allowed to live. What is a witch? What is witchcraft? That's a good question. Witchcraft is kishuv. The word kishuv stands for Makhish Pamalya Shalmala. Makhish Pamalya Shalmala means you are acting in contradiction to the heavenly hosts. Makhish Pamalya Shalmala. What does that mean? Everything in the physical world has a spiritual counterpart. Everything in the physical world, every blade of grass, the Gemara says, every blade of grass has an angel that tells it to grow. An angel means a spiritual counterpart. God created the world with a series of levels reaching from where, quote unquote, where God is, all the way down to the physical world. With spiritual, there's spiritual division between us and the heavenly spirits. So, every blade of grass, for example, has an angel. Every nation has an angel. Everything you have an angel. You have your own spiritual counterpart. Witchcraft is the ability Witchcraft is the ability to tap into the heavenly spirits, the spiritual spirits, and bring about a corresponding effect in the physical world. That's all I can tell you about the subject. That's all I can tell you about the subject. I don't know any more about it. Anything else I tell you, I'd have to tell you. Right, but that's all I can tell you about the subject. But anything in the spiritual realm, you tap into the spiritual realm and bring about an effect in the physical world. There is an ability to do so, but it is prohibited. It is forbidden to do so. So it says, "Nechasheva lo sechai." You could actually bring about an effect. It is a relative avera. It is a sin which is related to idol worship, and it is punishable in the most severe form by stoning. Therefore, so it says that it is absolutely forbidden. But yes, Judaism very much believes in the existence, not that it goes on, not that we're doing it, not that you know anybody is doing it, but the fact that it is a possibility, that there is a capability of performing spiritual, supernatural witchcraft. Yes, Judaism does believe in the Lord. Okay. Not only that, the Gemara says that one of the ways to dispel, to one of the ways to push off any effect of witchcraft is to be involved, to be inside water. Water helps to ward off the effects of witchcraft. Isn't that interesting?
Water is a fire.
Isn't that where you? There you are with water and fire. Again, you do for sure. You're absolutely right. So that this morning in Columbia Street, anytime somebody says, hey, I'm going to take a drink, there's Brent, you know, water is Torah. There you go. Let's go learn some more. But yeah, Brent, you're absolutely right. Water is Torah. You always have to suspect that when it mentions water, there is an allusion. There's an allusion to Torah. But what do you call it? Remember the Wizard of Oz, right? The Wizard of Oz, you know, she says, I'm melting. You know, they drink them with the water. They drink it with the water. The word that has got a source of is off that water pushes off witchcraft. Right? We have to go one on one. Yeah.
Question: what's the difference between witchcraft and what the Great Rabbanim has done over the years, miraculous things?
The one is witchcraft, and one is not. There are miracles. The miracles are not witchcraft. Miracles is the ability. Witchcraft is tapping into sources that you have no right to tap into. A miracle is where God is sending you to do something and God is doing it for you. And God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, stretch your hand out against the sea. Moshe stretches his hand out and sees split. God is splitting the sea.
Okay, like now, like there are cases like in recent history of
Rabbeinu
performing things.
Name one. I don't know of any case, anything that's not documented, anything we don't have in the Gemara is at best.
I'm talking about like recent history.
Like what?
I can't think offhand, but
I have to have an example.
Stories.
I have to have an example. Stories are just stories. Again, you know, stories.
Like people go to Rabbanim and pray and ask them for certain things, and they're able to do like miraculous.
There are things that are their tefillahs. Rabbanim can daven for somebody, but anybody, you know, if it's witchcraft, I don't care how long you guys do this. You know, you're not allowed to perform witchcraft. And
right.
Miracles? I don't know what a miracle is. Depends what the guy did. Depends what, and we certainly cannot rely on anecdotal evidence. Anecdotal evidence, particularly in Hasidic stories, you hear all sorts of Hasidic Michaelot. Hasidic stories. So you have to realize that Hasidic stories are generally told in a group to people who are, you know, stories get exaggerated over the course of time. You know, so it's very difficult to ascribe any credibility to the miracle story. There's certainly lessons to be taken out of certain Hasidic tales. But the stories of miracles and that sort of thing, we have no obligation to believe them. It's not one of the 13 principles of faith that we have to believe that the stories happen. We have an obligation to believe them. And often the stories are exaggerated. You know, there's one story I heard about the guys walking out. We have to stop it. Because the guys walking, these three guys are boasting about their Rebbe. One guy says, my Rebbe is so great. My Rebbe was once walking and he came across a puddle of water. He said, water ahim, water store, Brent. Water ahim, water ahair. The water split, my Rebbe walked right through. And the second guy looked at me and goes, that's nothing. My Rebbe was once walking and he saw a wall. He had a wall, a brick wall. I said, wall ahim, wall ahair. The wall split, my Rebbe walked through. Third guy said, that's nothing. My Rebbe was once walking on Shabbos and saw a $100 bill on the ground. He said, Shabbos Ahin, Shabbos Aharon. It's only a joke, gentlemen. It's only a joke.